The Banner Baseball Show. Paul Mancano and Andy Koska here on a Monday, an Orioles off day, to discuss a weekend series up in Pittsburgh that Andy was present for. Andy, did you have a good time in the Steel City over the weekend, even though the Orioles did not play their best baseball?
Oh, it was a great time. You know, you can never say no to a good Iron City lager. For those who have never tried one.
I've never had one.
It's like a Natty Bow, except it's actually brewed locally. So,
wow. Shade thrown. Yeah. For people who don't know, the manufacturing of Natty Bow has been moved out of state years ago, but it is back at Camden Yard, so you can still get that beer there. It's just not a local beer anymore. You know that I like any baseball-themed beers. I've done a video on it in the past. I'm already gathering beers for my next video at All Banner Sports. By the way, if you are listening or watching along, please like, give us a thumbs up, subscribe to the Baltimore Banner. .com, where you can read all of Andy's great work. $1 for 6 months, all there, as well as at All Banner Sports, at AF Koska. Like, review, rate, subscribe, all that good stuff. All right, Andy, let's talk about the weekend series up in Pittsburgh, because the sky was not falling in Pittsburgh, but based off the reaction from Orioles fans back in Baltimore, you would think it was. This Orioles team is 5-4 at this time, and keen observers have pointed out that the Orioles at this point last year through 9 games, we're also 5-4. However, there are some reasons for concern, and it's understandable on some level, because the Orioles offense has not been performing up to its standards. Brandon Hyde talked about it after the game yesterday. They have hit just .199 in the last 6 games with .170 batting average with runners in scoring position. Hat tip to Jacob Calvin-Meyer for tweeting that out. And it's a lot of their top performers, not Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson per se, but it is the veterans who have been on this team for years, like Austin Hayes, Cedric Mullins, Ramon Urias, who are struggling at the plate right now. And it's frustrating to see, especially because there are no easy answers right now for this offense, Andy.
Yeah, there's not really easy answers. And part of the, you know, we talked to Freddy Gonzalez, the bench coach, on Sunday morning, and he's been in baseball a long time, you know, as all of these guys have. But he, you know, really preached like, hey, you know, he's seen phenomenal starts where a player is hitting, you know, the laces off a ball, you know, to begin the season. And I, you know, he didn't say Jorge Mateo, but one of those players you think of is last year Jorge Mateo began the year hitting like .350, and you know, the rest of the season kind of came back to earth. And so it kind of goes both ways. Freddy Gonzalez was saying was that you have some guys that play unbelievably well in April and some guys who don't. And if you remember last year, Gunnar Henderson, you know, it was a slow start to the year. And then he, you know, turns it on in his rookie of the year, and he had a phenomenal end of the season. You know, obviously it's different. In terms of one was a 21-year-old last year, and some of these guys are more established veterans, so you expect them to be able to produce at a more routine clip to begin a year. But you mentioned it, Austin Hayes, Ramon Urias are two of the main ones who are hitting below 100 right now, and especially because they face so many left-handed pitchers, you want your right-handers to be able to be in the lineup every day. Otherwise, this is a left-handed heavy batting order. So you need people like Urias and Austin Hayes to really play at their best against left-handed pitching. They haven't yet. And now if you think about it, the O's have lost 4 of their 5 games against the left-handed starter, which reminds you a lot of what they saw late last year when the Texas Rangers rolled out a couple lefties, struggled in the postseason. That was part of the issue in the postseason, was a lefty on the bump. And you know, it's 9 games, you know, it's gonna be fine. You know, it's not a huge deal. The fact that Austin Hayes, though, sub 100 batting average after 9 games, is probably going to be something, you know, come August, that you're like, oh, he had a slow start, but he's really turned it on. You know, things like this happen all the time. And
right,
you know, I like to think that the sky is not falling. The sun will be behind the moon in a minute, but that does not mean the season is over.
That is fair. I mean, if you are watching us instead of the eclipse right now, true dedication as an Orioles fan. But let us be the sun to remind you that the sky is not, in fact, falling and the world is not ending.
It's fun saying that the banner is going to be the sun here. I don't know if we want to always go with that.
Oh, true. That's a bad reference to make. That is a bad reference to make. Yeah. No, but yeah, you are right to preach patience, I think, Andy. The frustrating thing, like you said, Austin Hayes hitting 077 with just two hits and 26 at-bats right now, three walks. He does not have an extra base hit. Hayes has always been a streaky hitter since the moment he came up 5 years ago. So that is to be expected. He's just going through an extreme slump right now. Mullins is hitting 143. He has two homers, but he has not walked at all. Ramon Rios with just one hit in 18 plate appearances and one walk. Those are three guys in your lineup that you would be hoping that to, you know, produce a little bit more at this point. But you're not going to go away from those guys. You can't go away from those guys. They have too much of a track record. They have done it for too long and been too key to this team's success over the last 2 years and beyond that you cannot go away from those guys. One guy that has been very frustrating, who is a veteran, who has not been on this team, though, for many years, he is a new addition to this team, is Tony Kemp. And I want to explain exactly why I'm getting Brett Phillips vibes from Tony Kemp, because you were on the beat back in 2022, Andy, when the Orioles traded for Brett Phillips from the Tampa Bay Rays. And I see a lot of similarities in the situation that Tony Kemp is in right now that Brett Phillips was in back then. The Orioles picked up Tony Kemp right before the start of the season. He has coming off a very bad season the year before. He did not make the club out of spring training for the Cincinnati Reds, and he was on the market. At the time, Jackson Holliday had just been sent back down to AAA Norfolk after having a great spring and looking fully ready for the big leagues. And the pitch on Tony Kemp is, well, he's a great clubhouse guy. He can play multiple positions. You can use him in a lot of different situations. So far, four games in, seven plate appearances, he has yet to have a hit. Brett Phillips, when the Orioles acquired him after the trade deadline, right around the trade deadline in 2022, he was coming off a first half of the season, which he hit 147 in 75 games with Tampa Bay. And the pitch for Brett Phillips was, well, he can play multiple positions. He's a great clubhouse guy. And at the time the Orioles acquired him, there was a guy named Kyle Stowers who was mashing in AAA Norfolk, 17 home runs in the first half of the season, was hitting 260. And Brett Phillips proceeded to get two hits and 17 plate appearances for a 118 batting average. And 2 weeks later, got DFA'd as they brought up Kyle Stowers. Will we see the same thing happen with Tony Kemp and Jackson Holliday, of Kemp being DFA'd to make room for Jackson Holliday in 2 weeks or a week's time? I don't know. But what I do know is that it feels like we are living Groundhog Day, and it feels like the Orioles are again wasting their time a bit by kicking the tires on a veteran from outside the organization, believing that they can get some kind of depth from this guy when it's been shown that he doesn't have a whole lot left, unfortunately. I like Tony Kemp a lot as a player when he was succeeding in Houston, and we met him first week of the season. He was great to talk to, and it seems like he has a lot of knowledge of this game that he can lend to the younger players. But I don't understand how Tony Kemp is on this team and Jackson Holliday isn't right now, considering what Kemp has done in last year, what he did in spring training for a different team, and what he has done through the first 2 weeks of the season so far, Andy.
I will take a reverse course and say I know exactly why Tony Kemp is on this team instead of Jackson Holliday. It's because Tony Kemp is the 26th man, and you don't have to worry about getting him plate appearances. You don't have to worry about him being on the field. And at this point of the season, it's fairly obvious that, you know, Mike Elias said it, that they want to get Jackson Holliday further at bats against left-handed pitching at a, you know, high level in the minors. And I'll come back to that point in a second. And then more time at second base, which is, you know, it's a position change that he looked great in spring training at second base. But did have, you know, when I was down in Norfolk, he did have a throwing error that, you know, didn't seem like it was, you know, that much his fault. It was kind of a toss that maybe Errol Robinson could have gotten at second. But, you know, still an error. He's still figuring out second base a little bit. That's the main reason. You want Jackson Holliday, as he's going through this development period, to play every day and get a heck of a lot of time. And at the beginning of the season, because there were so many lefties that the Orioles were slated to face, out of the gate, that it probably felt like this wasn't the exact right time for Jackson Holliday. Tony Kemp, meanwhile, great clubhouse presence, can play multiple positions, and you don't have to play him very frequently at all. Sure. I completely understand the frustration factor when Tony Kemp comes up in I think it was extra innings on Saturday, you know, or maybe it was the ninth inning Saturday, you know, it comes up and, you know, you're expecting, help to come through to win a ball game and, you know, doesn't come through, lays a bunt down, you know, a couple of nights ago, I forget which night that was, but, doesn't come through. I get the frustration because you see what's happening in AAA Norfolk and you want that in Baltimore. The one thing coming back to that left, wanting more left-handed pitching for Jackson to see.
Sure.
One thing that I have a trouble wrapping my head around completely with that idea is that if you're a high enough level left-hander, you're going to be in the big leagues just because there's fewer lefties. You need lefties in the big leagues at all times. There's just not that many great lefties in the minor leagues, you know? And so he's not going to be facing that many really standout lefties. His first at bat of the AAA season, I was down there in Norfolk for it, hits a home run off a lefty. He hasn't struck out against a lefty so far in AAA, but he hasn't had that much hard contact against them either, except for that home run, obviously. It's kind of an understandable concern, though, for the O's that, hey, if we're facing a bunch of lefties, and if you don't believe he's going to be in the lineup every single time against a lefty, let's, you know, have him get more everyday at-bats. That's devil's advocate there. Right. I do completely agree that it's difficult to look at, you know, Tony Kemp that is getting an opportunity when you'd want somebody else. And I actually my mind goes almost more to Connor Norby. The fact that he's a right-handed bat, plays second base, can play corner outfield. That's the exact profile of Tony Kemp, except he's a right-handed bat,
right,
instead of a left-handed bat. Connor Norby has also begun the season tremendously well. And
they all have in Norfolk. It feels like, yeah,
they all have. But you'd expect him to, you know, hopefully get a look at some point as well. Yeah. I don't know when that look is. I mean, Jackson's probably, well, he is the bigger, more hyped prospect. But I just look at it if it's the concern that, well, we need somebody to play against lefties. And if you don't believe Jackson Holliday can immediately play against lefties, that's why my mind goes to Connor Norby and says, well, you know, the 23-year-old, could be a platoon option who can play second base, can play left field, right field, and you feel pretty good about his offensive upside, even if his defense is major league average.
Yeah, and John Mioli wrote a great piece for the Baltimore Banner this morning about that first week plus of the season for Norfolk and trying to put it all in context, because it's been ridiculous if you look at the offensive numbers. Holliday hitting .342 through his first nine games with an OPS over 1,000. Kobe Mayo hitting .390, another right-handed hitting infielder, can't play second base, more of a third baseman, but OPS over 1,000. Norby, you mentioned, hitting .395 with a 1.2 OPS and four homers in his first nine games. And last but not least, Heston Kerstad hitting .462 with six homers in nine games down in Norfolk. And and Kyle Stowers, of course, mashing as well. I don't have his numbers directly in front of me, but he's been doing great as well. Mioli put it in good context by explaining the fact that, Charlotte, the team that Norfolk was playing the last week, does not have a very good team, and they were shuffling arms back and forth. However, the numbers speak for themselves, and the fact that these guys are absolutely mashing AAA competition doesn't mean it can translate directly. And I understand the idea of wanting to get Holliday every day at bats because he is the top prospect in all of baseball and you want to develop him. I think there's also something to be said for having the 26 best guys on your team, and whatever role Jackson Holliday is going to have on this team, you make room for him. And you see the struggles of some of the other guys on this team right now. Lefty, righty, doesn't matter a whole lot when Ramon Rios has one hit. And for Jackson Holliday, who had that homer, like you said, in the first game of the season off a lefty, has three hits and a walk in eight plate appearances against lefties so far this season, is getting more time at second base. You make room for the guy, and you shuffle whoever you need to shuffle around in order to make sure that Jackson Holliday is getting those kind of at-bats, because at this point, what they have right now offensively just has not been cutting it. The problem that I have with some of the discourse online, though, when it comes to the Orioles right now and the failing offense, is when fans start to turn on guys like Austin Hayes and Cedric Mullins based on a 9-game sample size, and say that Austin Hayes, who was an all-star a year ago, and Cedric Mullins, who was an all-star, 3 years ago, and plays gold glove caliber defense in center, both guys who can play in center, both guys who have proven themselves the last several years to be very productive. And yes, they'll go through occasional slumps, but they will usually pull themselves out of it. Will those guys be on the team past their contracts in expiring at the end of 2025? Who's to say? But right now, they are the best options available for this team. You can't just come up with a fake trade on tradeproposal.com or ESPN's trade machine and try to come up with a way to get these guys out of town to make room for guys like Kyle Stowers or Heston Kerstad, because those guys are too good and too valuable to be DFA'd, obviously. And you can't just come up with a fake trade. If the trade's not there, Michael Elias can't force a trade to get these guys out of town. And frankly, Brandon Hyde and Michael Elias love what Cedric Mullins and Austin Hayes bring to a clubhouse and bring to a team.
Yeah, I also, you know, what's going to happen when inevitably Colton Cowser goes 0-for-10 during a stretch? I mean, right. This is just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes in baseball. And I feel like you see it so frequently on social media, where it's the, you know, sky is falling, the sun is being blocked by the moon, that, you know,
that's true though. That's accurate.
Yeah. You know, and that, yeah, the latter half is accurate, but you know, it's, you know, at some point, you know, these young prospects are going to struggle a little bit. And I remember, you know, geez, when Gunnar was going through it at the beginning of last year, I remember seeing people say like, he's not ready, send him back down to the minors.
Right.
And you know, people love to jump to, letter Z when you got to go through 25 other ones. I think there's 26 in the alphabet. Hopefully I got that right. But
26 players on the roster, 26 letters in the alphabet. Yeah,
exactly. Works perfectly. Actually, that worked better than I was hoping it was going to. but yes, I completely agree. Also the defense from, I know Austin Hayes lost the ball in the sun in Pittsburgh, you know, that happens. I mean, geez, you know, just the way it is sometimes. Ball gets in the slot and you lose it. But who's going to play center field if you magically got rid of Austin Hayes and Cedric Mullins? I mean, right. You have to like think these things through. And the outfield defense, the defense in general has been phenomenal. Obviously, Dean Kramer threw away a ball. The wide throw from Gunnar Henderson to make a make a phenomenal play into the spectacular play didn't work out yesterday in Baltimore's favor. But overall, I mean, they're making dives. Cedric Mullins plays a phenomenal center field. Anthony Santander has taken, you know, the past couple of years has just been a phenomenal right fielder that I don't think it's enough plaudits for it. And definitely this year he's been at top of his game as well. These are guys that you don't just give these players away for nothing. They're worth a lot. They're positive war players. There's probably 25 other teams out there that would snap your hand off for a waiver claim on Austin Hayes, Cedric Mullins. You know, that's the way this works. And so I'm really, you know, I'm not surprised by seeing stuff, but I would, yeah, just recommend to hold your horses for a minute and remember that these are proven players.
Yeah.
And over the course of 162 games, a very large sample, 9 games is not indicative of what the 162 could look like. Of course, you know, it could be a struggle the rest of the year, but at a certain point you can make that call, but not after 9 games.
Yeah, no, we're not saying they get a leash that goes on to infinity, but
Paul, what do you think the leash is?
It's a good question, and I think no idea. I mean, if we're looking at, if Austin Hayes continues to get everyday at bats, and it's May 15th, and he's still hitting below 100, yeah, I would press the panic button at that point. If he's hitting, you know, 210 and he's got his batting average back up and he's hitting for more extra base hits right now. He has none. Mm-hmm. Then you press pause on the panic button because you are waiting for the guy to get out of it. It's a great question. And I think Mike Elias and Brandon Hyde are praying that they don't have to answer those kind of questions. But you put it very well when you said, who's going to play center field? You know, Heston Kjerstad cannot play center field in the big leagues. Colton Cowser can play a fine center field, but Ryan McKenna is no longer on the big league team.
Yeah, off the 40 man.
Off the 40 man. So he's down in AAA Norfolk, and I know fans are probably not too eager to have him come back up. And you have a massive, massive left field at Camden Yards, which is basically like playing center field. Both those guys. Yeah, is Hayes and Mullins can play center.
Those two, and then when you have Cowser in the mix as well, the fact that he can play center, it translates really well to left field. I mean, Cowser plays a good left field because he can play center. He has the range for that. So it's not an easy thing. You have to really pay attention to that there's two sides of the coin, and one is what do they bring, you know, offensively. And at a certain point, there will be a time where you say, okay, you're hitting sub 100 and it's been a month and a half and we're gonna have to make a change. This is not the time for that. And plus, it's really important to remember, part of the reason this pitching staff has been as good as it has the past 2 years, including this year, then part of 2022, and then all of last year, is because of the defense behind it. And there's a lot of ground ball pitchers in the bullpen. Yennier Cano is a ground ball specialist. Dylan Tate with that sinker ball, ground balls. I mean, you need a ground ball. You know, you need an infield that can scoop up those grounders. And we've seen it with Gunnar and Mateo and Arias at third base. You know, go of caliber. Jordan Westberg has looked great. You know, missed a real hot shot yesterday, but you know, it was ruled a base hit. It was correctly ruled a base hit. And Ryan Mountcastle, can't forget about him at first. And then the outfield, I mean, just think of how many, just this year, you know, the nine games, it can pick out like four or five full out running plays in the gap or diving catches from outfielders that have saved hits, if not runs.
Yes. So. I think two guys who also play great defense, for whom the leash is a little bit shorter than it is for Hayes and Mullins, is Jorge Mateo and Ramon Arias. Now, Jorge Mateo, by the way, is starting out the season great offensively, just as he did last year. He's hitting 300 to start the season. Ramon Arias is starting out about as slow as anyone in baseball. One hit in those 18 plate appearances, just one walk. He is really going through it right now. Both those guys don't have nearly the same track record that Hayes and Mullins do. And especially when they're playing in the infield, their defense has to be premium, but they have to stave off Jackson Holliday coming up, Kobe Mayo, and Connor Norby, three guys who appear to be ready for the big leagues right now.
Yeah.
Those guys are closer to DFA, consideration. However, Ramon Arias won a gold glove 2 years ago, still plays great defense at third base. They're expecting him and hoping that he is going to get out of this right now, get out of this slump. And Jorge Mateo brings something on the base paths, his speed, that right now very few players do on this team. You know, Cedric Mullins still has blistering speed. Gunnar Henderson is still a very good runner. However, Ryan McKenna's back down in AAA. And we saw the Orioles play the long game with Jorge Mateo and hold him all the way through the season in order to make sure that he played on their October roster, their ALDS roster, and was available as a pinch runner or pinch hitter at times. But these two guys are, yes, they're positive WAR players. Yes, they're good defenders. I do think the leash is a little bit shorter when it comes to Ramon Arias and Jorge Mateo. I don't know how long that leash is, but I think they face a tougher situation right now than Hayes and Mullins.
Yeah, I would agree. I think with Mateo's defensive versatility and the way he's starting offensively,
You can't do anything with that. Yeah.
He's doing great. You know, just, you know, put him to the side for a second. But Ramon Arias, definitely a tough start for him. And the fact that the positions he plays, you have basically a like for like change in the minors with three guys. Kobe can play third. Ramon plays third. Kobe's defense has taken steps forward. That was maybe the major hindrance on why he wouldn't be a major league ready prospect, you know, immediately. He has improved, although I think the game I was there Had two errors, but you know, that was just because I was there. I was a little nervous about that. Then you know, you had you know, Jackson Holliday, you can play second and short, and Connor Norby plays second and corner outfield. So you have those three guys that are all ready to make the jump. And at a certain point, if this team does need to shake it up and inject some new life, I would expect him to be, or Tony Kemp. Maybe even more Tony Kemp over Ramon, just because Ramon, I still think, has a lot of value. So is in his career, you're talking about a 250 some career hitter, not too much power, but good defense in multiple positions, can play first base as well. That's a hard thing to come by. You don't say, you know, you don't usually give up a player like that for nothing, which is something the Orioles definitely do not want to do when Mike Elias has made this roster really by working on the margins and maximizing the opportunities they have in regards of not adding payroll. Say, hey, let's get this guy on waivers because we see something that we could fix. You know, those things have really made this roster. You know, obviously the draft picks are big, but if you look at a lot of these contributors, Anthony Santander, well, that was Dan Duquette, but Anthony Santander, Rule Five,
draft, yeah,
you know, and you know, Ryan O'Hearn, you know, cheap pickup, you know, Danny Coulomb, you know, players of that ilk that are really centerpieces of what makes this team go. So they don't necessarily want to give up a guy like Ramon Arias. At a certain point, of course, you're going to have to make a call. You're going to have to decide one way or another. You know, maybe it's even just a cash consideration trade where you say, you know, maybe it can help out with some of the contract, you know, the paying off the contract. But whatever it is, it's not going to be an easy decision. I really don't envy the position they're in because they broke camp trusting this roster and knowing that they had the potential to, you know, if there was an injury or a slump, that you had the, you know, the reinforcements in AAA. But you don't ever want to be forced into, you know, making a hard decision and saying bye to a player that has helped your club get to this point. You know, Ramon played a big part last year, played a big part in 2022.
It would be a total reversal too. And because those are two guys that, remember, the Orioles picked both those guys up off waivers. They picked up Ramon Arias off waivers from the Cardinals. They picked up Jorge Mateo off waivers from the Padres, I believe. So for them to just end up back on waivers after everything that they contributed to the team, and then watch two teams who are not in the playoff race pick up both those guys and turn them back into the guys that we saw in 2022 and 2023 from those guys. It's a funny situation because we've seen the Orioles' expectations change. And as such, we've seen playing time doled out differently. And we've seen the leashes shorten.
Yeah, I would also say, just, you know, contradicting everything I just said, I like to play it down the middle. So this is now, I'm playing the reversal of what I just did. But this is a team that is in win now mode.
Right.
You know, you just won 101 games. The pressure's on to repeat in the AL East. They want to go back to the playoffs and go further this October. Win now comes with tough decisions. Some of that is you're going to have to decide who doesn't make the cut. And, you know, one of those things we saw with Ryan McKenna not making the team, that was a really hard decision because the clubhouse presence that he brought, Brandon Hyde definitely valued McKenna's makeup and his ability to be a base runner and defensive replacement late in games, really valued that. And but they made the decision, they figured that, hey, in win now mode, a, you know, prospect in Colton Cowser is going to give us a larger upside at the plate, if not necessarily on the bases. Although he's a fine base runner, I don't mean to take anything away, but you know, just that was a decision made with winning now in mind. And at a certain point, the Orioles are going to need to make the decision of Ramon Arias, you've given us a lot, or whoever it is. I'm just using him as an example. Yep. You know, you've given us a lot, but we have so and so in the minors that we think can give us more at this point. That's part of the tough decisions, and they're going to have to do it sooner rather than later. And what I mean, probably like in a month, they can call up prospects pretty soon now. You know, there's a little bit of where you can only do injury replacements for the very beginning of the season, but then you can make more promotions. When that time comes, I mean, we'll see how aggressive the roster construction is. You know, this offseason, Mike Elias said multiple times that this is an aggressive, the mentality is going to shift into a more aggressive mindset. They went and traded for Corbin Burns when they hadn't done that, obviously, for, you know, they haven't gotten rid of prospects in a buy side trade such as that before. Well, you know, Jack Flaherty last year, but this was a major prospect load you got rid of in Joey Ortiz and Dio Hall, who will be coming to Camden Yards as members of the Brewers at the end of this week. Good for them. That was a major statement saying, hey, we're going for it. The next major statement would have been, you know, Jackson Holliday on the opening day roster. They weren't exactly ready there because they didn't think Jackson Holliday was ready for it. Then, you know, now we're going to look at the next statement is how aggressive are they going to be in making midseason promotions or even trades of major yeah. league players out or in, you know, whatever direction it goes. That's the next big question.
Yeah. And we'll see if we get any answers over the coming week. The Orioles are still on the road, by the way. They begin a 3-game series against division rival Boston Red Sox for the Red Sox home opener, which feels way too late in the season to be doing a home opener. But Red Sox are coming home tomorrow. So that's like a 2:00 game. And then, like you mentioned, Andy, at the end of the week, they come back home to face the Brewers and DL Hall and Joey Ortiz. One more thing that we should touch on real quickly. John Means made another rehab start down in AAA Norfolk. Went a whole lot better than his last one. 3 innings, 1 run on just 1 hit, 4 strikeouts and 1 walk. He is slowly being built back up. And that's another decision the Orioles will have to make when he is ready to go, who they end up bumping out of the rotation and how they end up reshuffling their pitching staff. When do you think he will be ready to go? And do you think his timeline has changed at all?
I don't think it's changed at all, actually. I think he's still in line. Brandon Hyde, you know, when John Means started his rehab assignment with the Norfolk Tides, Brandon Hyde said that it'd probably be the 30 days or close to it. So it would be about a month. So I'd imagine by the end of this month, 2 more starts in him. You know, the fact that he got to 3 innings is a good step. Maybe next time he can go to 4 or 5. You know, and maybe a final rehab start to 5 or 6. That's a pretty good base. If he can get up to 70 to 80 pitches with the ability to go maybe a little bit longer, he'd be at a good space to come back for Baltimore. Obviously, it'll be interesting to see just how he looks in the next coming games, because the first rehab start was basically his first spring training start, if you want to just equate the two.
Right.
7 runs or whatever against him. I forget the exact number.
7 runs in 1 inning, I think.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I don't need to tell you that's not great. This one was a lot better, but again, it was against the Charlotte Knights team that is a AAA affiliate of the Chicago White Sox, and the White Sox don't exactly have a great major league roster and don't exactly have a great AAA roster. So take from that what you will. But we'll see, you know, as the next couple starts, you know, are ongoing. John is obviously another guy that's done so much for this organization and has the potential to be a big piece of this rotation. Maybe it's a like-for-like change where Cole Irvin is moved into more of a bullpen role. I honestly was surprised. I kind of thought Cole Irvin might be used out of the bullpen in Pittsburgh because you had these off days, so you can move Corbin Burns up to Tuesday, which they did. But then they had Corbin pitching Wednesday instead of Grayson Wednesday, and Grayson pitched Friday. So yeah, Grayson could have gone Wednesday.
Yeah, but the off days on either side of this Pittsburgh series could have at least allowed some room. And the way that Cole Irvin struggled in his first start, you know, could have allowed them to maybe make that transition smoothly. I like how you're thinking, Andy.
I'm trying.
Yeah. So you have complete coverage, and Danielle as well, and John Mioli are all writing great stuff for thebaltimorebanner.com, where you can subscribe $1 for 6 months. Andy, thanks so much for hopping on at AF Koska. Follow him on Twitter. And we'll talk again soon. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Banner Baseball Show, and we will catch you next time.